With the next presentation. Hello, my name is Lars Eilerwecht. Some of you may already know me from my involvement in the Apache Software Foundation, but today the topic is not Apache, it's Sapphire. The micro's back. Okay, let's start again. My name is Lars Eilerwecht, and this presentation is about Sapphire Mail. Before I actually start explaining all the functional and technical details about Sapphire Mail, I would like to give you a quick introduction what this is actually about, who is doing this, and why this is actually being done. What the hell is Sapphire Mail? Sapphire Mail is an email encryption tool currently available for Windows, Linux, and Mac. So far we spent 3 years of development on this product, on this project. Sapphire Mail is still in beta. It will be available and released to the general public next year. Sapphire Mail will be freely available to consumers and non-commercial organizations, of course, even after the beta phase. Of course, this is a security product, so we are going to release the source code of the product as well. So, who is so crazy to spend 3 years of development on an email encryption system? The company behind that is Sapphire Labs. We are based in Munich and Zurich. The research and development is mainly done in Munich. We are currently staffed with about 30 people. So, who the hell, why the hell do we need a new encryption technology? We have PGP, we have X509, S/MIME. Sending an encrypted message from A to B is basically not a big deal. A big deal is a key exchange. How do I make sure that the public key I got from some location like a web server or via email is actually the authentic public key of that person? How do I determine the authenticity of that public key for any given user in a specific system? You probably know the existing solutions so far. We have the Web of Trust, that's known from PGP, OpenPGP, and we have the concept of a trusted third party, which is used in the X509 conventional PKI world. A trusted third party, you probably know that concept. You have a certification authority issuing certificates, like it certifies a public key by signing it. So the user can easily verify the CA signature on a certificate. If the signature is valid, the certificate is valid, and it can right away use the public key. That's nice, but on the other hand, it requires that the users have to blindly trust the CA, which is, as you probably agree, a very bad thing. Because the CA in that case can very easily do a man-in-the-middle attack. It basically can change, revoke the certificate because more or less the certificate is owned by the CA and not by the user. The Web of Trust, you know, from OpenPGP is better because users sign each other's keys. For example, if I've verified the fingerprint and the key of a friend, I can sign his key, and someone else who's using that key, who is actually trusting me to introduce such keys, doesn't need to do any further checking because he trusts me and the signature is on that new public key, so we can right away using it. The problem is that this doesn't happen very often in the real world. You really, really, well, in only a few cases, you actually have a trust pass leading to someone you trust. So if you don't have that trust pass, you have to revert to doing a manual fingerprint check, which is a very big overhead. For example, you have to call someone, or you actually have to meet with someone face to face if you want real security. I mean, for example, if you don't know someone and have never met him, have never talked to him, for example, if you received his public key in an email, you can just call him, but how do you know with whom you're actually speaking? So actually, if you want real security, you have to meet face to face with someone, and that simply doesn't scale. It simply doesn't work. Most importantly, this whole fingerprint checking and all this stuff, it doesn't work for normal users because they simply don't get it. They don't know why a fingerprint check is required, and they simply don't understand public key crypto. So more or less, the web of trust has simply failed and does not work for normal users. So that leads to the goals we actually have with Sapphire, Sapphire Mail. The goal is to create an email encryption tool that is so easy to use that actually any user can use it, no matter how stupid he is. I mean, creating something which is easy to use is, well, not really easy, but possible. The challenge and the interesting part is actually creating something which is easy to use and is so secure that even the most paranoid security expert would want to use it. So the goal basically was to create this weapons of mass encryption. Okay, so much about the introduction, what this is actually about and why we are doing this. Now let's look at the details. Sapphire Mail sits between your email client and your email server on your computer. It's something you install on your desktop or notebook. It basically works like a transparent proxy. It works on the protocol level, reading SMTP, POP3, and IMAP, and encrypting, decrypting, signing, and verifying on the fly on behalf of the user. So there's no integration with an email client. You don't need a specific plugin for an email client because it works with any email client supporting these standard protocols. In future versions, we are going to support proprietary protocols as well, namely Exchange and Lotus Notes. I already mentioned it in the beginning. We are supporting Windows, namely 2000 and XP, Linux, kernel 2.4 and higher, and macOS 10. So the Sapphire Mail client itself requires access to central services, mainly a certification and directory service. So all the interaction with the Sapphire Mail client and the central infrastructure, the central service, is fully automated. So the user doesn't have to do like sending some certification stuff or whatever manually, but this just happens automatically. All the communication with the service is encrypted. All server responses are signed, and the Sapphire Mail client also caches responses, so it doesn't always have to connect to a central server in order to do something. I mentioned in the beginning that a PKI-style central infrastructure has some trust issues involved. But Sapphire Mail is not a conventional system in that sense. And I'm going to show you in a minute how this actually works, because on the right-hand side, you're seeing the so-called Sapphire fingerprint directory. Sapphire includes an automated fingerprint verification system, basically the same you know from PGP, like verifying a fingerprint of a public key in order to make sure that this is really the original public key from that person. This is fully automated. Before I explain that, let's look at the other parts of the system first. So at the top, you can see the central infrastructure, basically the main components of it. You have the certification authority, which takes care of the issuing certificates. on request or as requested by a Sapphire Mail client. The directory is used by the client to actually download and retrieve certificates from other users. In addition, it downloads fingerprint data and basically processes incoming, outgoing emails on the fly on behalf of the user. There's basically no big deal about the directory service. It provides access to active and revoked certificates. So if the Sapphire Mail client needs a public key, it connects to the server, downloads a certificate, verifies the certificate, and uses the public key to encrypt the message or to verify a signature. Retrieval from the directory is based on either a unique certificate ID, which is the hash, or based on the email address of the user. There's one important thing. So the Sapphire directory, or actually the Sapphire system itself, makes sure or ensures that only a single active certificate is available for a given identity, like an email address. So you may know that from PGP. If you look at a public key server for an email address, you get like 3, 4, 5 hits. And you're sitting there like wondering, OK, which key I'm going to be using? Which one is still active? Because the expiration of a public key with PGP is possible, but most people simply don't set an expire date. So you end up with a lot of public keys on a key server which are still valid, but may no longer in use. So this is different in the Sapphire Mail system because we really ensure that it's simply not possible to generate a certificate for an email address for which an active certificate already exists. So the user has to revoke the certificate before actually he's able to create a new one. While talking about email addresses, that's basically all we use in a certificate. There's no other information about the keyholder required apart from his email address. So it's not like a classical PKI X509 style certificate where you have a name, an address, whatever. So the Sapphire certificate binds basically public keys to a given identity, in this case, an email address, in the case of a server certificate to a host or domain name. Using only email addresses actually allow for an automated certification process. So on the left-hand side, you have basically our infamous Alice, who would like to communicate with Bob, but doesn't have a certificate yet. So she submits a certification request to the CA. Actually, she doesn't do it. She just enters an email address in the Sapphire Mail client. The Sapphire Mail client generates the private key and public keys. The private keys, of course, never leave the user's computer, and submits a certification request to the CA. The CA basically verifies if the request is okay and sends a challenge message to Alice. This happens via email, by the way. Happens a challenge message to Alice. Using email, we actually verify that the email address is actually in use and works. And we verify that all the keys, like the Sapphire Mail client using or behind that email address has some private keys that correspond to the public keys submitted in the original request. So the Sapphire Mail client automatically responds to the challenge request from the CA. If it sees that email, it automatically does the final certification request and sends it as a response to the CA. The CA, again, verifies the data in the request if everything's fine, and finally issues the certificate and puts that into the directory system. In addition, it's returned in an email to the user who sent the request. Regarding certificates, I briefly mentioned it already. The certificate binds actually multiple public keys to an identity. Basically, the system supports in a single certificate an arbitrary number of public keys. Currently, we use, currently a certificate includes 3 public keys, RSA, DSA, and an Elgamal key. They're used for different functions inside the Sapphire Mail system. I already mentioned that only a single active certificate exists for a specific identity at a given time, which is sounds like a minor feature, but it's actually very, very important. Most importantly, the private key owner controls the revocation and actually the creation and renewal as well of a certificate. So the CA can, for example, not revoke a certificate without cooperation of the user. One thing which I'd like to mention as well is you may know from the X509 world that the so-called certificate revocation list, CRL, just a list of fingerprints of entries, of IDs actually, indicating which certificate has been revoked. We don't do that in the Sapphire system. In the case of a revocation, the Sapphire Mail client creates a complete new certification request, and the CA issues a so-called revocation certificate. It's basically identical to the original certificate. Most importantly, it includes the same public keys, the same values, but it's just marked as revoked. The directory still contains this certificate. So even if you verify a signature after like 1 year, you can still verify the signature by downloading the certificate. Just normally verify the signature. And if the signature has been created before the certificate expired or got revoked, everything is fine. Some more information about the certificates. I already mentioned that the CA cannot revoke a certificate because you know that from PGP, we're using self-signatures. Every certificate contains a self-signature from the user. Actually, there are two issuer signatures from the CA and two owner signatures, RSA and DSA. In addition, if a certificate is renewed, which is actually a combination of a creation and revocation process, so in the case of a renewal, the old certificate is replaced with a revocation certificate, and a complete new certificate is generated, like a new key pair, most importantly. In that case, in the case of a renewal, which can be done by the user at any time or happens automatically before the certificate expires and is done by the Sapphire Mail client. So in that case, the old revocation certificate contains a successor signature. So the new certificate, the public keys from the new certificate are used to sign the old certificate. Both certificates contain a cryptographic link to each other, like the certificate idea. So we actually create a chain between all these certificates. So over time you have that long chain, and if, for example, one of your friends already used one of your certificates, you can actually check back to that certificate he used like a few weeks or a few months before. Now let's look how the actual securing works. Like, how do you secure an email message? How does that work and integrate with my normal emailing routines? As I already mentioned, everything happens on the fly. The decision if a message is to be encrypted or signed happens while it is submitted to your email server. Or, for example, signatures are verified while you actually retrieve the messages from your POP or IMAP server. It has a nice advantage. Consider yourself on an airplane without a network connection. Or at a CCC event without a network connection. With PGP or SMIME, you need the public key at the time you create the message, because usually all this happens inside your mail client. And if you don't have the public key, you cannot create the message, because your mail system normally wants to, or your mail client normally wants to encrypt it right away. With Sapphire Mail, there's nothing inside your mail client, because that happens while they are being transmitted to your mail server, which is when you're online. So that's a nice advantage doing it on the protocol level, actually. The user can define default security policies for encryption and signing. So the default is actually try to encrypt. Example, if I'm sending an email to 10 people, 8 people have Sapphire, 2 people don't, then the Sapphire Mail client automatically fetches the certificates for the 8 users and encrypts the message to these 8 users. The other two recipients get the message plain text. In the case of try to encrypt, I don't see anything. I don't get a pop-up. But if I would like to be warned if a message cannot be encrypted, I can change that to either warn if unencrypted or refuse unencrypted if I really want to cut the connection, basically, if something cannot be encrypted. Same for signing. It can be configured to always sign outgoing emails or to not sign outgoing emails by default. We have also, in addition, individual recipient settings where the user can configure, for example, for a domain name, a host name, or an individual user, what the default policy for encryption and signing should be. So that's for outgoing emails. Of course, somehow the Sapphire Mail client needs to, well, show the user what happened to the message, like what the status of the message is. I forgot about that. This is like a power user feature, basically, because it's also possible to override the security policies on a per message base. So we don't have a plugin in the mail client, so there's no buttons, encrypt, signing, or something. In order to communicate easily with the Sapphire Mail client on your system, you can put little tags in the subject. For example, if you've chosen to not sign outgoing emails by default, but want to sign a specific message, you just put an S exclamation mark in the subject line. The Sapphire Mail client actually uses that one and actually signs the message and removes, of course, this little tag, so your recipient doesn't see that. Same works for encryption. Or for example, if you want to send an email to some recipient plain text for whatever reason, you can just put a little U in the subject. Okay, now for the outgoing emails, for the incoming emails. The Sapphire Mail client, someone needs to tell the user what the status of the email message is. This is done by putting little status tags in the subject, or optionally, that can be configured in the from header. You can also configure if you want the long tags or the short ones. So in the case of a message which was only encrypted but not signed, you will see the tag encrypted in brackets at the end of your subject line. In the case of a plain text message, you would just see a little U for unsecure, unencrypted. This can also be turned off if you don't care what the status actually is. In addition to that, the Sapphire Mail client puts a little C in brackets next to each address which is Sapphire enabled. This happens for the from to and CC headers. While talking about headers, you may know from PGP and SMIME that the subject, or basically none of the headers, are encrypted. People tend to make mistakes regarding that and putting some, confidential information in the subject and encrypting the body, but leaving the subject basically plain text. In Sapphire Mail, the whole message, including the headers, most importantly the subject header, is actually encrypted. A new message is generated with only the minimal headers that are required to deliver the message. And the original headers are just put inside the body and the encrypted contents of the message. The receiving Sapphire Mail client on the other end basically just decrypts the body and replaces the message with the original message. If some headers have been added while the message was in transport, like receive headers, for example, they're just merged into the original message. So this, for example, hides things like internal received headers, message ideas, and most importantly, the subject line. And there's also an interesting bit about that. Actually, the information about people who are on CC is actually hidden because Sapphire Mail generates dedicated messages for each recipient. So someone who is looking at your mail traffic will only see that you generate a message to someone, but it can actually don't see if some people have been on the CC of that message or got a copy of that message as well. Most importantly, the message format does not reveal if someone has been on the BCC, like got a black carbon copy of the message. This happens, for example, with the PGP. If you generate a message to like five recipients and one was on BCC, you cannot see that inside the message headers, but you can actually look inside the encrypted contents and see for whom the message has been encrypted. Some notes about signing. The Sapphire signature includes information about the from and to address and the date. Especially the date is very important and interesting, because with other encryption tools, you simply don't know when a signature has been generated. You can find out with which key it has been generated. That's the whole point of the signature. But with Sapphire, you can actually check when the signature has been generated, who generated it, and for whom it was generated. Some note about the attachments. Actually, Sapphire Mail does not generate a single message for the whole MIME part, as it is done, for example, with PGP MIME format. It simply signs each MIME part, each attachment, individually. Sounds a little bit stupid, but has a nice advantage, especially for, or most importantly, for plain text messages, for clear text signed messages, because virus and content scanners tend to remove specific MIME parts, like, for example, some companies remove all HTML MIME parts, for example, for incoming email. So in that case, the Sapphire Mail client would still be able to verify the other parts of the message, because removing a single MIME part doesn't break the signature. Some people don't want to sign all outgoing email by default. Makes sense. The problem is, with PGP and SMIME, for example, if you receive an encrypted message, it was encrypted, but you have no way of finding out who actually sent the message. You know, a normal from address can be spoofed in email very easily. This is different with Sapphire Mail, because every encrypted message, even if it is not signed, contains information about the sender of the message, because we simply sign the session key with the sender's private key. So the recipient of such a message can identify who actually sent the message, and this always matches the from address in the email. Now for the interesting part, the trust model and the automated fingerprint system I mentioned. So I mentioned in the beginning that a central infrastructure is basically a bad idea. So let's look how we actually have resolved the trust issues in such a central, or with such a concept of a central infrastructure. Of course, we still have the classical hierarchical trust model elements you may know from conventional PKI solutions, like there's a root CA issuing the certificate for the CA. The CA issues user certificates, users sign emails, and if you verify the signature on email, you basically go the paths leading to the root CA. I don't think I have to explain that in detail. Let's look at the distributed trust model elements. That's actually somehow the peer-to-peer style element in Sapphire Mail. Because this system makes sure that we simply cannot compromise the infrastructure. So that includes Sapphire Labs, who is operating the infrastructure. If someone, for example, breaks into the infrastructure, it protects against that as well. Or, for example, if someone would like to force us to actually do something with the system. So the fingerprint verification system is fully automated. Basically, it works like that. The Sapphire CA creates for every action a fingerprint and publishes this fingerprint data. The clients download the data, verify the data. Most importantly, when they communicate with each other, like as part of the normal email communication, they exchange and compare this fingerprint data to make sure that everyone has the same copy of the fingerprint data. Okay, once more, let's look at the concept in detail. Whenever the CA issues a new certificate or revokes an old certificate, a hash value is generated over the certificate. So that's basically the certificate fingerprint. In addition, after certain intervals, a new summary hash is generated over the previous summary hashes and the new created certificate fingerprints, the new certificate hashes. This technique is called hash chaining. So you generate a log, a list of summary hashes and fingerprint, certificate hashes. These hashes are stored together with a timestamp in that log or list. And this data, this fingerprint data, this hash data, is made available to all Sapphire clients. and are distributed by the normal infrastructure, normal directory service. The interesting part is what we call the cross-client verification, like the peer-to-peer verification system. For example, if I'm sending another Sapphire user an email, the Sapphire Mail client includes the most current summary hash from the list in the email. That's not visible to the user, that's just part of the encrypted message format. The receiving Sapphire Mail client verifies the summary hash against his local copy of the fingerprint data. If both entries match, everything's fine. Otherwise, the user is permanently informed that something is wrong. This ensures that every user in the Sapphire Mail system has the same fingerprint data. So here's a little schematic diagram about that. At the top, you can see the Sapphire CA creating the hashes over the certificates, the fingerprints. We have basically a CA for fingerprints, the fingerprint authority, which collects the individual fingerprints for the certificates and generates the summary hashes. These are published in a directory service where they are downloaded by the users. In that example, we have three different users downloading this data. They happen to communicate with each other, and by doing that, they always exchange the summary hashes and verify them against the local copy. It's basically like a phone book. Just imagine a phone book. The fingerprints are on each page of the telephone book, and after certain intervals, like for every new page, we generate a summary hash. So these summary hashes are included in the emails. So basically, we ensure that everyone got the same telephone book. By doing that, we make sure that once a certificate got published, it cannot be changed later, because if I change a single bit in a certificate, the fingerprint changes. And then the summary hash changes. So I would have to change all data which got generated after that certificate got generated. So this makes sure that the CA, or someone who has access to these systems, to these services, make sure that simply nothing is possible. Most importantly, man-in-the-middle attacks are no longer possible. I simply cannot easily exchange a public key in a certificate without alerting many, many users. And that's actually the point. The system itself, of course, does not protect or prevent a compromise of the system. Of course, we could just change a certificate. But by doing that, or if someone else just breaks in and changes something, it will alert many, many users. Changing a single bit in a certificate somewhere simply causes all these pop-ups appearing on users' Sapphire Mail screens, basically. So it's impossible to perform any malicious actions against the users. So more or less, we've eliminated the trust issue, and the users basically don't have to trust the infrastructure. They can just use it like you use a telephone book. Some other note about time. Basically, I've mentioned a few times that a timestamp, a date is included. And this is actually very important and very helpful to have a synchronized time for all clients. So we've included a time service in the Sapphire system. Every Sapphire Mail client synchronizes its local time that's only kept internal to the client and not like synchronized with a computer's normal time zone or normal time setting. Just synchronizes its time with a time service. Thus, we make sure that every client has the same time, which is very helpful to prevent replay attacks, for example, or to make sure that every signature has a proper date, a proper timestamp in it. I'm basically done with the presentation. Last but not least, I have a few slides about the algorithms we are using. Basically, the Sapphire certificate format and the Sapphire system itself can use arbitrary algorithms like asymmetric, symmetric hash algorithms. These slides are about what we use today, what is currently being used in the Sapphire Mail client. So I already mentioned that a certificate contains three public keys. Today, this is RSA, AlgaMal, and DSA. We only use, well, not only, but we are using 2048 bit keys, even for DSA. So we're using a a custom version of the DSA algorithm, which is usually only specified for 1 kbit keys. In our case, we're using the DSA algorithm with a 2048-bit prime number and a 2056-bit group order, whatever. We've also tried using larger keys, even though 2048-bit is actually enough for to actually secure messages today. We've spoken once with Whitfield Diffie, and we were very surprised that we actually use, as a minimum, 2048-bit. Internal tests have shown that if you use like 16 kbit keys or more, it's actually not fun anymore, especially creating such keys. It takes like days or weeks, actually, depending on your computer power. Regarding the symmetric algorithms, most functions are based on AES. For some functions, we may use Twofish and Serpent inside the system. The sci-fi block modes we're using is our CBCHMAC, counter with CBCMAC, and CTR. The implementations are using nonce-based symmetric encryption, like we're using random lead-ins, that actually prevents or protects against chosen plaintext attacks on the system. The key size we're using is 256-bit. Hash algorithms are also very important. We are using SHA-256 and Whirlpool. Whirlpool is not really a known sapphire, but it has recently been endorsed by a few, let's say, security committees, basically. We're using all hash algorithms in double hashing mode. That means the output of the hash is the GAN used as the input of the hash, and we basically calculate the hash two times. That eliminates any possibility of length extension attacks against these hashes. This is actually very important for our fingerprint system, because that's where the actual security, the trust model, is based on. So it's very important that these hashes are rock solid, basically. Any algorithm is basically completely useless if you use bad random numbers. We're using a random number generator published by Niels Ferguson and Bruce Schneier, which is called Fortuna. In our case, the implementation uses the Twofish cipher in counter mode, and we're also using we're using multiple OS-specific entropy sources to actually seed the Fortuna random number generator. So I'm more or less done. If you are interested in testing or in looking at sci-fi ML, you're invited to check out the sci-fi beta.com site. Currently, it's still password protected, as it's not yet public. You don't need to hack the server, because that's the password. You can log in with the username usual and the password suspects. You will find some more information on the page apart from the sci-fi ML client itself. Most importantly, we have already done a few review papers, or are working on some review papers. The first one is already available. It was done by Russ Housley and Niels Ferguson. It's a security design review about the sci-fi system. One focus of the paper is the fingerprint system itself. I just mentioned that there's a log of fingerprint data. Actually, the implementation is more complex. Describing that in such a short session would really be too much detail. We're actually using a tree-like structure to make sure that a client doesn't need to download megabytes of fingerprints, but can just download certain parts of the fingerprint data, actually, to verify a single certificate. That actually happens depending on the user's configuration on demand. Like if the sci-fi ML client is about to encrypt a message, it downloads the certificate. It downloads the fingerprint data required just for that certificate and verifies the certificate and uses the public key. So that's a few kilobytes of overhead, basically, for each message, and that's it. Of course, a user can choose to actually always download all fingerprint data if he is interested in that. I think we have a few more minutes left for questions, and I assume there are some questions. Are there any questions? There's the questions. FX. Do we have a mic?
Okay, one thing that really puzzles me is, are you providing a way for automated virus and spam encryption?
Sorry, for what? For?
automated virus and spam encryption. What prevents a virus or a spam engine to actually use Cypher to encrypt email and basically invalidate virus scanners and spam scanners and clearing houses?
I mean, actually, there are two answers to that question. First, there are antivirus and spam scanners that actually work on the mail client side. So when the message already got decrypted, they look at the data. Regarding spammers, why should a spammer actually spend time on encrypting messages? That's a little...
Because it doesn't get filtered anymore. So, like, usually large corporations or large email providers have spam filters and virus filters central, which means that at this point in time, the email message is still encrypted and they can't do basically shit about it.
I mean, if you're talking about companies, companies tend to be not really interested in actually desktop-based encryption, like client-to-client encryption. It's the most secure because you have really end-to-end encryption. But what we are going to provide as a commercial solution, basically, is a gateway version of Cypher Mail. So you can just install it before actually your content scanners, your virus scanners, look at the message, and that's then border-to-border encryption, basically, or actually client-to that company encryption.
The complaint here, if I may, the complaint here is, why are you offering end-to-end encryption to people when we're just gotten used to a world where centralized big brother services are protecting us from all this evil? Or is that not your question?
Thank you.
Okay.
Your identities are quite different from the in semantics from the identities in OpenPGP, where I have a real name. Email address, UID, or even a photo, which is not a good idea considering the buffer overflows in libpng and so on.
But that's the reason why we haven't included any picture IDs or anything.
Imagine somebody creates an email address, bruce.schneier@hotmail.com. He obviously is able to answer any challenge sent to that email.
Of course.
Okay, so Cypher will say, this is bruce.schneier@hotmail.com, which is really correct, but it's not Bruce Schneier. Okay, this...
Wait, I mean that just comes from your assumption that bruce.schneier@hotmail.com is the Bruce Schneier.
Yeah, but it's not
assumption. He's probably not using Hotmail, but...
obviously, we know that, but imagine this imaginary bruce.schneier@hotmail starts sending stuff to Bugtrack. And says, well, this is totally insecure, or this is extremely secure, says I, Bruce Schneier. And you get a, this is correctly signed by bruce.schneier@hotmail. Your intended user base will probably...
let me end.
Bugtrack is smart enough to distinguish hotmail.com from counterpain.com.
Okay, but substitute Bugtrack by something else. PC security.
It's not a phishing solution.
I mean, the point is that yes, of course, we just certify that a public key or a set of public keys belongs to that email address.
And that's not even that.
And, I mean, for example, if you look at PGP or SMIME, what prevents you from creating, or what prevents me from creating a PGP key, which has bruce.schneier@hotmail.com in it, and just
it's
sending a signed message to Bugtrack?
Yeah, it's been done.
It's not a,
Yeah, but, okay. Another point.
So what's the question?
Yeah.
Again.
Okay, jump the question. Another question.
Okay, other question.
You place a certain trust in ISPs, don't you? Because the ability to answer to an email is not singular to the user who owns this email address. It's singular to everybody on the path, and if you can fake border gateway to almost everybody. So almost everybody can create keys for almost any email address.
I mean, if someone is in control of your mailbox, you have...
Or the path to my mailbox.
Yeah, then you have problems anyway. I mean, for example, I mentioned that only a single certificate can be generated for an email address. So, for example, if there's a man in the middle who is creating a certificate on your behalf, after that, you either start receiving encrypted mail, if he's not decrypting it for you. If he's decrypting it for you, you don't know it. But if you then would like to create a certificate on your own to use Cypher, this is no longer possible. And you get a failure message that a certificate already exists. And you can actually look at that certificate.
Okay.
So you always find out if someone is actually man in the middle in you. That's the main part, actually.
Okay.
Are there any other questions?
few questions from my side. First of all, if I create a certificate for a certain email address, that means this that means this email address is completely blocked. So I could, on the one hand side, start creating massive certificates for well-known email addresses, and they don't have a chance to revoke it. Would that be right?
What do you mean you're able to generate massive email addresses?
That goes a bit in the direction of my anxious question, because if I, I'm able to intercept the mail pass, which is basically every ISP in the world, then I can massively generate certificates, and they don't have any chance to ever use the Great Sapphire product. Because they are blocked.
Then you should change your ISP if he does that for you.
Okay, but second question to that, if I'm losing my revocation certificate, even if I shouldn't to, I don't have a chance to sci-fi my email address anymore?
You have. Of course, there are people that lose their hard disk and don't have backups, and people forgetting passphrases.
Right.
That's the reason why there are so many public keys on the key service, on the PGP key service. They're no longer being used because people forgot the passphrase or the or lost the private keys. There are various ways to revoke a certificate. The normal way, of course, is you still have the passphrase actually to start sci-fi mail and to unlock your local key ring. You basically need a passphrase. So if you still have the passphrase and the private keys, you can just submit a revocation request to the CA. Everything's fine. If you lost your hard disk, for example, and you don't have a backup, you can just go to the sci-fi webpage, because we have a so-called emergency revocation system. During the creation of a certificate, the sci-fi mail client creates an emergency revocation request. This is uploaded to the sci-fi infrastructure. It's encrypted with a passphrase and stored on our servers. So you can just go to the webpage, enter your passphrase and your email address, and your certificate gets revoked. In addition to that, if you just lost your passphrase, by default, this emergency revocation request is also stored plain text on your local system. You can delete it if you want, but if you keep it, for example, on a backup copy, it can be used with a program which is included in the sci-fi mail distribution to actually send that revocation request to the CA and make sure that your certificate gets revoked. So there's usually always a way to revoke it, unless you've lost your private keys, have no backup, and don't remember your passphrase.
Okay, great. Second question about the key size. Is this the default that you use 2046-bit keys, or can I change it, for example, to 4096?
I know you like 4096-bit keys.
Are you denying me?
The minimum key size is 2K.
Okay.
The user cannot change it. That's not possible. Of course, we can't... Why should he? What's the purpose of using 4K bit keys?
Because we had a lecture or the last event where it was said that 1K bit keys are really insecure. 2000
yeah, I agree.
Are currently secure, and they recommend 4 at least. Some are using 8.
I mean, we mentioned I mentioned that we are going to provide gateway versions as well. On gateway versions, it really is painful to encrypt decrypt with 2K bit keys, or even not 2K bit, but 4K bit keys or higher keys. If the request is there, we can actually easily scale that up to, I don't know, 16K bit if you would like to. But that gets really, really painful. And in my opinion, it doesn't make sense to use really large key sizes, because you solve an issue with it which actually doesn't exist. The main issue is the key exchange and the security of the software itself. Of course, if the request and the demand is actually there, we are going to provide the option to use 4K bit keys as well. The current default, the current only key size which is supported is 2K bit. A colleague is just mentioning something. There are three keys in a certificate. And for example, you have RSA and Algamal. Actually, if a message is encrypted, we actually do multi-layer encryption. So we have two layers on each email. The first layer is RSA together with one of the symmetric ciphers. In addition to that, the whole output of that is encrypted again with the Algamal cipher. So we have actually two layers on this. And for example, if you then create two 4K bit keys, it gets a little bit painful. Okay. Any other questions?
Last question, or maybe it's more last. What's the future plan for this system? Is it planned to be distributed, like I can run my own cipher server, or is it always just a central one at the cipher.com?
I mean, the idea is to have a central place where a sci-fi mail client can find a certificate. I think that's the question, why this is central, or if you're going to allow other companies to run such an infrastructure as well. Is it?
Yeah, so there's like no single point of failure, and I can run my own trusted cipher, maybe a network, and my friends can trust me or something. Or if
I mean, the main infrastructure will always be central. It doesn't really have to be operated by us. Currently, that's actually the case. In addition to that, we are, of course, going to provide the proxy server, the sci-fi proxy server, because access to the service is not direct, but we're using a network of proxy servers, which is used to connect to the infrastructure. So, for example, it would be great if, for example, ISPs or companies install a proxy server. The proxy server caches requests, so it will also save the bandwidth. And actually, the proxy becomes a client to the infrastructure, so we don't see who's actually behind a proxy server. So the idea is to have organizations and ISPs and organizations basically to run these proxy servers on behalf of us. Currently, it's only Sci-Fi Labs who is running these services because we are still in beta. Do we have still time for a few more questions? Yeah.
Regarding your emergency revocation procedure,
yeah.
If I lose my private key and use your emergency revocation procedure, I can't sign my new certificate. So this certificate chain will be broken.
In that